Welcome to the Daily Wrap Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
April 2nd, 2019. Thank you for joining me yet again. And I was actually planning on not doing a show today, but it's my birthday today. So I felt I really wanted to come on and do a show because it's my birthday. As weird as that may sound, I wanted to take the day off at first, but then I said, you know what? This is most important to me. This is what I care about more than anything else in the world. I care about you all more than anything else in the world. So why not? What a better day than my birthday to come on and do a show like this. But as you can tell, it is earlier than usual today for a show that I usually, sometimes I do it extra early. But there's going to be other things that no doubt happen today that I'll follow up with tomorrow. But here are, I think, the four stories that I saw so far today that I thought were the most important things that I wanted to bring to you before I went out and enjoyed the rest of my birthday. So let's get right into it. And there's definitely some interesting things today. Jewish groups that are accusing the GOP, of weaponizing anti-Semitism in order to prolong the Yemen invasion. That's their own statement. Why, and this, of course, while the U.S. military just conducted massive airstrikes on the most impoverished nation in the world, the Yemen, you got that correct. China now has troops on the ground in Venezuela. And, of course, the truth about U.S. foreign policy in Syria from U.S. official statements that actually directly contradict the Trump administration narrative. But to begin today, the one that I thought was the most important stemming off a story we've been covering for a very long time, but specifically in regard to the attention it's been getting with Israel and their war crimes in regard to the Great March of Return in Gaza. This article coming from Mint Press News, the article is entitled "Israel Praises Nonviolence of Great March Return Anniversary Protest in Gaza, Shoots Demonstrators Anyway." They've been defending themselves, they claim. That's why they have to shoot people. They absolutely have to, but now they openly said that they're praising their nonviolent actions and then killed people anyway. And that should definitely offend some of you, knowing that they've been lying this whole time, at least as it seems. Now, during a nonviolent commemoration of the beginning of the Great March, Return March, and Palestine's Land Day, Israeli Defense Forces, IDF snipers, killed four people in Gaza. Four people. Three of them minors, and shot six journalists and three medical volunteers. Anywhere else that happened anywhere in the world, especially a U.S. adversary, this would be massive news, clearly. All of whom were actually clearly marked in press and medical team vests. Again, an obvious war crime. Now, in addition to the four fatalities, an estimated 244 Palestinians were injured, including 56 children, 15 women, and all this according to Gaza's health ministry. Now, again, and for some information as well, for you to know why these people are actually protesting. Now, this government-sanctioned violence occurred despite an unprecedented effort by Gazans as well as Hamas to keep all demonstrators hundreds of meters from the border fence. And again, the fact there's a border fence and a bunker with heavily armed people behind both of those, and yet they still pretend they defend themselves. But regardless, Gazans and Hamas were keeping demonstrators hundreds of meters from the border fence and to prevent any behavior, they would say, that could be considered violent or threatening to Israeli forces. Anything at all. Even the New York Times noted as much, writing that, quote, "Hamas deployed scores of people in orange vests to keep most demonstrators at least 300 yards from the fence, the distance Israel had demanded as a buffer." Now, we pointed out countless times the very clear connection to Israel funding, or at least facilitating funding, finding its way to Hamas, as well as their connection to the creation of the group to begin with. That doesn't mean that today there's not groups that have changed, that have shifted away from it. I mean, clearly right now it seems like they're acting in opposition to what Israel wants, but the reality is there is connections there. But it's not always all-encompassing for those that may say, oh, you always say that they're funded by them. The reality is it goes both ways in all situations. But we can see very clearly proof that there's connections to their funding. As Netanyahu just clearly said, their funding is important because it keeps them divided, showing you that there's at least a facilitation there. That's my opinion. Do the research for yourself. As well as that even Business Insider and a lot of different groups have done reports that Hamas was, they made it happen so they could use it. But that doesn't mean today that there's not people that are in it that are fighting for the Palestinian people. Now, despite claims from the IDF's Arabic language spokesman that peaceful protests would be rewarded, Israel forces used live ammunition with little restraint. hence the large number of casualties. And of course, no IDF personnel were killed or injured during Saturday's demonstrations. Interesting. Now, claims have been made by Gazans that journalists and medics were intentionally targeted, something we've verified many times by IDF snipers, despite their clearly marked status as members of the press and medical personnel. Now, one prominent Gazan journalist, Waleed Mahmoud, had been targeted by a sniper who had aimed at his head, and he was only saved when the bullet hit his camera that was positioned in front of his face. Now, Israel, of course, praised the peaceful nature of Saturday's demonstrations, which Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu described as calm. That's his own quote. Even though Israel forces killed four Palestinians and injured scores more. So even while they're saying great job for making it so calm and peaceful, and they still killed four people. I mean, like, really take a moment and recognize how absurd this is. The double standard that somehow applies to Israel, that they can kill four people and that's considered a peaceful protest. That's a calm one. And they praise him. Good job, guys, for keeping it so peaceful. We only had to kill four of your unarmed protesters. I mean, this should be shocking to people. Now, Netanyahu asserted that the nonviolence that defined Saturday's demonstrations was achieved thanks to Israel's recent movement of tanks, artillery, and four brigades of soldiers to the Gaza border. So because of his violent actions and threats of violence, that's why people were so peaceful till they only had to kill four. I mean, this is offensive. Now, Israel also recently bombed the Gaza Strip in response to an alleged rocket attack that we covered at the time that damaged a home in central Israel but caused no deaths. And this is where all this stems from. One rocket that caused minimal damage, didn't kill anybody, and they've killed people since then repeatedly. They bombed innocent areas over and over and over repeatedly from that day. This is an overwhelmingly disproportionate response. But the point of all of this is to help him achieve his election goals. So killing people for a political reason. That's the literal definition of terrorism. I'll let you work that one out. This should be offensive to everybody recognizing that even when they claim it was a peaceful protest, by their own admission, they still had to kill four people. I put that on Syria, put that on Venezuela. What do you think Trump and his entire administration will be saying right now? But if it's in France or Israel, the mainstream media is peeved. They don't talk about it at all because they're dutifully doing their job as propagandists, but the government will never point it out. Important to recognize the reality. And of course, any who seek to address these obvious crimes against humanity committed by the Israeli government, obfuscated by the United States and their mainstream media, are met with accusations of anti-Semitism. Regardless of how valid and legitimate the accusations and claims are, regardless of the proof involved, you're anti-Semitic if you point to crimes of Israeli government, except that even this is now being called out, which I always point that it seems there's kind of a rise in attention to stand against these kind of government actions, specifically in regard to Israel. This is the important one that I think is very revealing in regard to, I mean, it's important to know that there are Jewish groups that are very much against Israel, very much against Zionism, right? But the racist fringe from either side would never want to admit that. But the reality is it's there. And there's a lot of people fighting against this. But now we have these groups that are calling out their use of anti-Semitism as a weapon, but specifically to prolong the slaughter of Yemen. I mean, think about even the phrasing, to prolong the slaughter of Yemen. Why would anybody want to prolong a slaughter of people? That's a legitimate question you should be asking yourself, but there are people in our Congress right now who are bending over backwards to make sure that this does not end. Because, you know, that's what they do. They're fighting for what Americans want, because apparently Americans want to kill Yemeni's people. I mean, clearly we know that's not the case. Now, Jewish advocacy groups on Monday condemned House Republicans for once again attempting to weaponize anti-Semitism. Once again, they say, to derail the Yemen War Powers Resolution, which seeks to end U.S. complicity in the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Because, you know, why would we want to end the world's worst humanitarian crisis? Not organic, mind you. Didn't just pop up. It was created because of U.S. and Saudi actions, as well as their allies involved. Now, it says, quote, just as they did earlier this year, Republican leaders may again shamefully exploit concerns over bigotry against Jews to stall a totally unrelated bill that would help put an end to U.S. support for the war in Yemen. This is according to Jeremy Ben-Ami, president of the progressive-leaning Jewish advocacy group, J Street, and he said this in his recent statement. Now, we just recently touched on this story. We just recently discussed that this was about to happen. The motion to recommit. We talked about this. And this is exactly what this story is getting into. And now these Jewish groups are standing up and saying, yeah, these people are using anti-Semitism. Now, the House is expected to vote on the Yemen War Powers Resolution as early as this week. If it passes the lower chamber, the bill will head to President Donald Trump's desk, which will be promptly vetoed. I'm pretty sure we can see that coming. Regardless, though, they're taking measures to stop this from even getting that far, so he doesn't have to look bad as someone vetoing a very obviously necessary bill, even though the bill itself has loopholes, but that's an entirely different discussion that we'll address when it gets there. This is a step in the right direction, regardless of the loophole that allows them to continue to fight Al-Qaeda, even though they're working with Al-Qaeda in Yemen, which is actually a story I'll get to in a moment in regard to a different story from today. Now, it says, quote, by tacking on non-germane, basically irrelevant language condemning anti-Semitism, they would hand Mitch McConnell the ability to once again stall a vote on the Yemen resolution. That's a quote from Ben Ami. He says, House Democrats should refuse to cooperate with such an outrageous stunt. And as I always point out, it's both sides. It's much more than just, thank you for the super chat, Marshall. I appreciate that. I appreciate it. Thank you. That's nice to see. Have a drink on you. I definitely will. But we talked about this before, and it's both sides. It's not just Democrats, just Republicans. It's clearly a both sides of the fake two-party deception issue. But right now, specifically, one side is fighting for the, and it's flipped throughout recent memory, where one side will be fighting for something specifically for Israel and the other one condemns it. But in the reality, it all ends up passing anyway. It's political theater. But he goes on to say, House Democrats should refuse to cooperate with such an outrageous stunt. They must see through the GOP's cynical maneuver, he says, and reject any attempt to use language related to anti-Semitism as a tool to obstruct the passage of unrelated legislation. Now, what's so interesting about this is it's what we have been saying. And of course, we get called bigots and anti-Semites for even bringing this up. How dare you suggest they would use anti-Semitism to achieve a political goal, which is exactly what this Jewish group is saying. But I'm sure, just like Jake pointed out in a tweet from a couple shows ago, they're literally, by their own language, calling these Jewish people anti-Semites because of what they're doing, which is very ridiculous. But what's interesting here at the end of the day is even the ADL has stood up and said, yes, they're using this in the wrong way and condemned the GOP for doing this. So there may be a larger agenda here at play that we're really not seeing. Maybe there's something altogether working and it's all leading towards the same agenda, even though it appears they're fighting against it. Because it's surprising to me to see even something like the ADL, which is clearly part of the problem, standing up and doing that. But it's interesting nonetheless. And it's clear that what they're doing is this, using anti-Semitism as a tool to achieve this goal. Because what does the Yemen bill have to do with anti-Semitism? Which is exactly what even our congressmen and women are saying. It's exactly, they've done this countless times. This is how American politics work. These writers, they slip in verbiage at the very last moment. They do motions to recommit. It's political theater and it is political sabotage. And at the end of the day, it's used, especially when Americans are not paying attention. Now, the Jewish group statements came as Republicans are reportedly planning, as I just reported, to file a motion of recommit when the House votes on the Yemen resolution as early as next week. And this is done specifically to hinder the passage of this bill. Again, as I also just reported, House Republicans used the motion to recommit to insert language condemning anti-Semitism into this Yemen resolution earlier this year. It's not even the first time. Now, because the language was not related to the legislation, the House was forced to re-vote on the bill, which may, again, be the exact thing that's about to happen. And they know this. It's an agenda to slow this down, possibly stop it, maybe all the way until 2020. Just like they did with the farm bill, they effectively stopped any discussion of Yemen whatsoever until the end of the 115th Congress, which is unprecedented. You can't discuss a very prominent political issue, and that was swept into the farm bill. They are lying to you. They are manipulating you, even though congressmen and women stood up and said, how dare you do this? This is illegal. It happened anyway, mostly because Americans have no idea what's going on in the political sphere. And of course, while the GOP is working overtime to prolong and just continue to force through what is openly acknowledged as the world's most severe humanitarian catastrophe, created entirely by U.S. and its allies, the U.S. military is carrying out airstrikes on the most impoverished nation in the world. As this article reports, coming from Anti-Media, U.S. conducts a flurry of airstrikes against southern Yemen. Now, according to U.S. Central Command, at least 6 airstrikes were carried out by U.S. forces over the past week in Yemen. The strikes were intended, they claimed, to target the local al-Qaeda affiliate in al-Bajah province. Now, as usual, CENTCOM offered no casualty data or no details of who was hit, as this is the new norm under the Trump presidency. They don't have to tell us the people they kill. Of course, because a lot of them are civilians, they just don't want you to see that. Or they don't report who was even in the intended target. We don't even get to know anymore. Now, Baada is known as a major haven for al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, the AQAP, the al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula acronym. Now, of course, considering all of this, this is the case due to U.S.-Saudi invasion of Yemen. That's why al-Qaeda is present to the degree it is. This is the al-Qaeda haven right there in the center, as you can see, the U.S.-Saudi-controlled territory. Well, the map's hard to see. That this is the most up-to-date. They have all the statements on there, but the green is all Saudi territory. The purple is the Houthis holding on to the, you know, what the Yemeni people actually want, the Houthi movement, the popular controlled movement, fighting for the people. All the green is Saudi-controlled area, and guess what that massive swath of gray is? That's al-Qaeda territory, right snug in the center of their control, and there's also the little ISIS territory right there next to it. Both operating freely, right? And that has not changed since they took that territory. They've allowed them to operate. They've maintained their presence just like they do in Syria. And I'm speaking of the U.S. and, you know, Saudi or Israel. It's all the same agenda here. So what they're doing in Syria is the same thing. Allowing that group to maintain its presence like they're doing in al-Tanf in different areas. And Idlib, like they're right now protecting against Syria and Russia, taking back Idlib because they need to maintain that illegal terrorist presence to pretend justify their presence in Syria. Now they pretend they're fighting al-Qaeda, but you can see clearly that they're just allowing them to function right here. And of course, as you know, those that have been paying attention, and we've talked about this before, that we know that the U.S. is actually working with al-Qaeda in Yemen, as the Associated Press even said themselves. It's not a secret. You know, this is what's so frustrating, that they can be working with the group they pretend to be fighting on the ground and pretend that they just bombed these areas to fight these groups. I mean, it's just offensive. Now, CENTCOM says that the recent operation was coordinated with the Saudi-backed government. I'm not surprised. CENTCOM further said that they've launched 8 strikes overall in 2019. Now, none of these, as we just pointed out at the beginning, we don't know who they targeted or who they actually killed. So for all we know, this is bombing civilians. This is attacking the Houthi forces during the supposed ceasefire under the guise of fighting al-Qaeda, even though we know that they work with al-Qaeda. It's a sitcom. It's ridiculous. It's cartoonish the way that they carry these things out. And as I've repeatedly pointed out, the reality that the Houthi government, the Hadi government, the fake puppet that they want in place, the U.S. and Israel and Saudi Arabia in Yemen, that the Houthis and the Yemeni people pushed out because he is a U.S. puppet. That's the person they want to force back in. The man's name is Hadi. His government has 4 people right now on the U.S. list of terrorism. Right now. And yet the U.S. wants to push them in while condemning al-Qaeda. While these groups, 4 of them in his governmental office, work with al-Qaeda. On the U.S. list. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. They just don't think you're going to see it. It's ridiculous. While then they cast these fake ideas of terrorism onto the people they want to overthrow. With 0 evidence whatsoever. It truly needs to show you the reality of the situation. They're working with these terrorists. They're using them to overthrow governments and then pretending to fight them if and when it suits their agenda, or clearly they need to cover up their airstrikes that who knows what they're trying to accomplish. Now on to some other foreign policy news in regard to Venezuela. And this is a big development, And I think it even further puts the stick in the spokes of the already floundering U.S. regime change attempt on Venezuela. This coming from Zero Hedge, entitled, China sends over 120 troops to Venezuela in defiance of U.S. warnings. So now we have Russian troops on the ground and Chinese troops on the ground, both of whom are welcome there, as both of which are allies to Venezuela. And all, of course, the U.S. is going to and already has made this out to be some kind of a horrific, aggressive, provocative step by China and Russia. How dare they? Which is ridiculous. I mean, it is patently absurd when you see that the U.S. has bases surrounding all these people and clearly on the other hemisphere, yet only the U.S. can do that. No one else is allowed on the Western Hemisphere, even if they're allies with the countries. I mean, I'm not trying to suggest that what China or Russia are doing there is not potentially dangerous, or they're not doing it for their own benefit. Ultimately, it doesn't matter. And so that statement today has become unheard of. How dare you say that? We need to protect ourselves in the Western Hemisphere, except the fact that the U.S. doesn't protect anybody else. It doesn't. I mean, how many times we need to repeatedly show what they've done throughout history? And I'm talking about the U.S. oligarchy here. The fake government, the government that's stolen this country from the American people. The real United States. Because they're clearly not fighting for anybody else. They're devastating countries, reaping the resources, and leaving them in ruin. Leaving them in the wake of their ongoing war on terrorism. And we pretend like, oh my God, we need to go in there and save everybody. Of course, what China and Russia are doing is clearly going to benefit them there. They probably wouldn't do it. But they're also clearly helping Venezuela. Exactly like the U.S. is currently not. Now, as the author notes in the beginning of the article, it doesn't appear last Friday's strong warning from John Bolton for countries, quote, external to Western Hemisphere to keep their militaries out of Venezuela. And he said, you know, it didn't have the intended effect. Clearly it didn't. Again, how ridiculous for Bolton to say that while the U.S. is completely scattered all over the world, even around its adversaries. Now, Bolton's and the other White House statements saying, quote, Russia has to get out, came following Russian Air Force planes landing in Caracas with about 100 troops. Now, which the Kremlin said were there as specialists servicing existing defense equipment contracts, which is within the Constitution. But the reality is even bringing troops there, despite what U.S. doctrine mandates have said, they're allowed to as an ally, just like the U.S. does with its allies all over the world. And now, according to Al-Mazdar News, citing defense analyst photographs and local reports, quote, more than 120 soldiers from the Chinese People's Liberation Army has just arrived in Venezuela's Margarita Island to deliver humanitarian and military supplies to the government forces. The military flight appears to have touched down on Sunday, actually, 2 days after a prior Chinese cargo plane delivered 65 more tons of medicine and other aid to Venezuela. You know, the very thing the U.S. pretends isn't happening. How dare Maduro not allow any aid in as aid's coming in from everywhere but the United States. Now, the Chinese troops are also there, ostensibly to assist with the humanitarian mission, but it appears Beijing is also now alongside the Russians pushing back against Washington's ultimatums to stay out of Venezuela after repeatedly condemning any external coup plotting against Nicolas Maduro. As Paul Craig Roberts predicted that, quote, if Russia and China quickly establish a military presence in Venezuela to protect their loans and oil investments, because clearly that matters, clearly there's an incentive for them to make sure this doesn't happen, goes on to say Venezuela could be saved. And other countries that would like to be independent would take heart that, although there's no support for self-determination anywhere in the Western world, the former authoritarian countries will support it. Now, I argue that I don't think China is any way, shape, or form a former authoritarian country. And you could clearly make case that Russia may not be either. But clearly, at the very least, I can see what Russia's been doing in Syria is very, very different than the aggressively authoritarian foreign policy of the U.S. government. Or I should say the oligarchy and their imperialistic foreign policy. Now, other assertions of independence would arise, he says, and the empire would collapse. Clearly, it seems that at least for the first part, this is what's happening, that they have effectively stopped this by being there. Now, as Al-Mazdar comments of Beijing sending its own troops in to assist, he says, quote, these moves by the Russian and Chinese armed forces appear to be a power play against the U.S. administration, who is actively pushing to remove Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro from power. So this will report as this develops, but I think this is what's abundantly clear at this point, with both Russia and China on the ground, that this is not happening. And if it does, it'll be one of the most monumentally dangerous things we've ever seen happen in our lifetime, as we have three super nuclear superpowers effectively coming to bat. And that's dangerous. But I think this is the end of the coup. I think what we're going to see is U.S. rhetoric and manipulations all the way till 2020 in order to make them make it seem like they didn't fail. Like, because clearly they failed. It's bad. And their propaganda's been poor. They've been effectively losing at every step of the way. It's been remedial. They're using the tired old ploys they've used before. They're even using the tired old men that have carried these things out illegally before. And everyone can see through it. So they're going to continue this rhetoric. They're going to force it down your throat, all with the agenda to make it seem like it hasn't ended yet, even though, in my opinion, it's over. And I think they know this. Now, for the final story of the day in regard to Syria, I think this is important because it shows you the lies about what they've been telling you, about what's really going on, and about the truth about why they're staying there and why they've been there from the beginning, which is about Assad. It's about overthrowing the government. It has really nothing to do with fighting for people or fighting, you know, the lies they continue to sell you about this whole story in Syria are more transparent than ever with the decision to stay there now with the 1,000 troops after all the lies. But this is from their own statements. From 21st Century Wire, Syria, U.S. clings to regime change fantasy by occupying Syrian territory and threatening economic warfare, according to former ambassador Peter Ford. Now, threatening economic warfare, that doesn't sound like what we're hearing about Syria right now, right? We're hearing, oh, well, we're pulling out, things are winding down, we're staying to defend Israel and to fight Iran, but only in a couple places. Really not much going on, except what he's pointing out here is the opposite. And again, this is narrative versus action, where the reality is we actually have troop increases right now. We have more people than before. We have more weapons, more equipment, more helicopters. All the stuff came in under the guise of pulling people out, and that hasn't happened yet. And now he's making clear that economic warfare is actually still going on against Assad specifically, and that's the real goal, which is not a shock to people paying attention, but it counters what Trump and his administration are saying. Now, with the military situation largely frozen, as the article put it, the last 2 months have been marked mainly by developments involving the U.S. in Syria. The supposed ending of the ISIS caliphate in U.S.-controlled parts of Syria, Trump's U-turn over keeping U.S. forces in Syria in general, and of course, the U.S. recognition of Israel's annexation of Golan, the illegal act. Ambassador James Jeffrey, the U.S. Special Envoy for Syria, gave an underreported press briefing on March 25th, which made pretty obvious what the U.S. actual strategy is, and that's clearly why it wasn't very reported on, because it told you the truth. Now, far from being sated with its demolition of ISIS and resigned to Assad's victory, the U.S. clearly is clinging to its desire to remove Assad and proposes to go about that through economic warfare and by maintaining a military presence using the pretext of ensuring the enduring defeat of ISIS, which could go on forever, which is what I recently just said. The idea that they may come back at any time, so we have to keep people there. It's a fabrication to make sure you can maintain troop presence forever. Now, here's what Jeffrey said, including the annotations included from the article that they added, which are priceless. He says, okay, that's a broad question. First of all, the political solution. The U.S. policy in Syria is to ensure the enduring defeat of ISIS. We're a big step closer to that today, but ISIS still lives on in various cells and in the minds of many of the people in the areas that we've liberated. Even though I don't think of any area that the U.S. has technically liberated other than using for SDF against ISIS, which are all included in their sphere, to make it appear that they're doing things when in reality they're not. When in reality, Iran, Syria, and Russia have been the ones that have actually fought ISIS and liberated Syria. But claiming that the people in the areas that we've liberated, with the author adds, not just cells and mines, actually, thousands of ISIS fighters hold territory right now in desert areas contested with the Syrian army in nominally government-controlled territory, but acknowledging that would mean acknowledging that Assad is fighting ISIS. So they have to pretend that it's all over, even though Assad and Syrian forces are right now fighting the group that the U.S. has been funding, protecting, and arming and supporting. And he goes on, he says, secondly, quote, to ensure a political process that will give us a different kind of government, and the author adds, there you go, regime change, clearly, that will encourage people to come back, and the author adds, because then we shall stop using depopulation as a weapon. And he goes on to say, and be a decent player in the international arena. The author adds, wonderful euphemism for being more pliant towards Israel, which is exactly what we're talking about, always connecting the Israeli foreign policy to this. And he goes on to say, unlike what we've seen from Syria in the last 8 years, you know, actually fighting ISIS and taking back the country. And then thirdly, he says, the removal of all Iranian commanded forces from the entirety of Syria. And the author adds, even though, unlike ourselves, they're there by invitation. And he ends by saying, so our forces will stay on in very limited numbers in the northeast and al-Tamf to continue our clearing operations and stability operations against ISIS for a period of time not to be determined at this point. So they plan to stay indefinitely. But the reality of his is basically making it very clear that the effort is taking out Assad. That is what they're ultimately trying to do, is oversee to unseat the government. And even their own official statements make very clear that this is what they're currently doing. But nonetheless, We'll have a Trump administration people stand up and say that, oh, we're here to combat Iran, which is ultimately part of it. Clearly, probably the most important part. But the focus there is to get Assad out of the way so they can officially control Syria. But they won't say this anymore because they have no legal justification to do so, because they just ridiculously claimed that ISIS was defeated. All of this stuff is about manipulating your perception of the reality. Every single day you're being bombarded with lies, manipulations, and obfuscations of the truth. And all you have to do is really take a moment and sit back and research for yourself. It's a good rule of thumb to what they will tell you to immediately assume it's probably a lie, because they are aggressively lying to you all the time. But you get truth from the mainstream media. You get truth from anywhere. But the point is, they use these nuggets of truth to ultimately lead you in the wrong direction where it suits the end narrative, which is ultimately to get you thinking what the government wants you to be thinking, to cover their illegal operations around the world. And all the stories, including what's going on with Israel, ties back to the reality of the situation, which these people are rogue. And the world's beginning to wake up to it. So it really depends on what you will do about it, who you will tell, who you will share this with, and how you will go about it. I don't have all the answers. But I can tell you one thing, that the first step is clearly to wake enough people up to be able to make whatever action we want a reality. So thank you so much for tuning in today. I'm going to go enjoy the rest of my birthday and go out and enjoy the world, put my feet on the ground and, you know, grounding as we've talked about in the past, and really be a part of the world today. But thank you so much for joining me. I love you all. If you'd like to support this channel, there's many ways to do so in the show notes, from buying a t-shirt, question everything, to supporting us with PayPal or Patreon, or anything, but just simply sharing the link, as I always say, is the most important thing, being a part of the conversation. I love you all. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.